A new study shows almost half of Illinois voters want to leave the state.
You know, the financial situation of the state, which is very poor, as well as the corruption, some of these things are a bit of a drag.
That was Aaron Wren, a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. Today we talk with a man who's finally left Illinois after 58 years and speak with David Yepsen of the Paul Simon Institute. They're the ones behind that recent poll. We'll also look at why Illinois is way overpaying unemployment benefits to people who aren't eligible. Plus,
that's me, Fred the House Cat. When my family leaves for the day, I don't just sit inside watching the world go by. I become Nature Cat, backyard explorer extraordinaire.
We'll talk with Highland Park natives and brothers David and Adam Rudman about their hit PBS kids cartoon Nature Cat. Season 2 was just announced. That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned.
So what are we waiting for? We're so excited.
You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Are you fed up with Illinois? A new study by the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute shows that nearly half of Illinois voters say they're so fed up they're thinking about leaving the state. We have David Yepsen on the line from Carbondale. He's the director of the Paul Simon Institute. He's going to go over all of these findings with us. But first, we wanted to start with Tim Busby. Tim's lived in Illinois his entire life until 8 weeks ago. He just moved to Indiana because he says he's fed up with the state's financial and political shortcomings. Tim, thanks for joining us on the 21st. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Tim, you lived in Illinois your entire life. You were born and raised in Vermilion County, and you lived in Danville for the past 35 years. What was the final straw for you deciding to move to Indiana?
Well, there were lots of reasons I decided to move to Indiana, and obviously taxes were at the top of the list. But in my opinion, when you start talking about taxes, you have to ask yourself, why are these taxes out of control? And I did a lot of research before I ultimately decided to move. It's 2.5 years worth. The real issue in Illinois, as I saw it, as the result of my research, was that there are 6,963 units of government in Illinois, which is the highest in the nation by more than 1,800. And a lot of these units of government provide duplicated services, which all they do are add costs in the form of taxes and fees. You know, it's nothing new. It's been going on for decades. But these units of government provide no real value to the taxpayer. So the light came on in my personal circumstance that I just didn't see for the balance of my lifetime any end result that was ultimately positive. So At that point, I decided it was time to move on.
Well, and you're right about the units of government, Tim. Certainly that's something that has been a topic of conversation in this state for years, the levels and layers of municipalities and bureaucracies throughout Illinois. That's something that lots of people have talked about. I wonder, was there an exact moment 2.5 years ago where you sort of felt like, I really need to start doing this research? I really need to take this seriously.
Yes. Well, there were lots of moments. You know, we all realize that there are many problems in the state of Illinois. Taxes are one of them, which is what I believe this segment is kind of focusing. There's lots of issues. I think we've got some serious business model and mindset problems of the voters that require major reform. There was one particular comment, which I think you're probably referring to, that was probably the last straw for me, and that was when the Speaker of the House stated on a news program in 2013 that, quote, if you're still in love with the state of Illinois and living here, you're probably not moving. I remember that moment very vividly, and I stood up in my living room and looked at my wife, and I said, that's it. We're out of here. To me, that was just an extremely arrogant position to take against the residents of the state of Illinois.
And why did you decide to move to Indiana?
Well, I did a lot of research on various different states. Indiana, well, getting back to the units of government, Indiana has 61.1% less units of government. Now, everybody, you know, they probably don't even really think about units of government. What hits them between the eyes is a real estate tax bill or any other taxes. My real estate taxes, for example, if you compare apples to apples, Illinois versus Indiana, my real estate taxes in Indiana are about one-third of what they would be in Illinois. Income tax is less. Even when you count, I live in Tippecanoe County now, which is Lafayette, and they have a 0.4% economic development tax that stays in the county. Even when you put that in, Indiana's percentage-wise considerably less than Illinois. The job market is way better for a whole host of reasons we could talk about for hours, but primarily, in my opinion, again, it's a much more business-friendly environment that attracts business. Now, Indiana's far from perfect. Don't misconstrue that comment. And I would also like to add, the last thing in the world that I ever wanted to do was leave Illinois. This was my home. I felt like I was being forced out more so than it was a choice. And in all fairness, my daughter also lives in the Lafayette area.
Okay, so that was also a big draw too, sure.
It was.
Well, Tim, let me ask you something, because we've talked about taxes, and I wonder how you feel, and I know you've just been in the Lafayette area for just about 2 months, so this may not be a fair question to ask right now, but you also sound like a guy who's done a lot of research, so I imagine you probably researched this before you moved to your area. What do you think the level of services you're getting in Indiana compares to what you had when you were in the Danville area in terms of services, I guess, value for money, right? The taxes that you paid in Danville versus the taxes that you're now paying in the Lafayette area in Indiana. How do those stack up?
It's a great question, and I did do a lot of research on that. One example of what you're alluding to, and I believe, Indiana, there was a survey done sometime in the last year or two. Indiana was voted the best roads and bridges in the entire country. So using that one example, and there are many, but I know that we're on a limited time frame here, but using that one example, when I pay my real estate tax bill over there, and I go out and I get in my truck and I drive down the roads are great, at least in my area. Now, I haven't traveled, obviously, from one end of the state to the other, but I feel like when I pay my tax money over there in the short time I've lived there, that I feel like I'm getting a lot of value as a taxpayer for my money, as opposed to in Illinois, I feel like my tax money, in essence, is going to try and keep the boat afloat with duct tape and bailing wire. I just don't see where I was receiving, you know, much added value at all for my tax money here in Illinois.
That's Tim Busby. We've been speaking with Tim, no longer an Illinois resident. He now lives in Indiana, although I know you still work a little bit in Illinois. For those of you who are listening, are you fed up with Illinois? We've been talking about taxes. We've been talking about other issues for the state. You can join our conversation. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet to 21st Show. Paul says, the new Hoosier is right, that personal income tax is lower in Indiana. Services in Illinois have been better till now. You can join our conversation, tweet, call. I want to bring someone else into this. David Yepsen is the director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University in Carbondale. He's one of the folks behind this poll that we've been talking about. David, welcome back to the 21st.
It's good to be with you.
Now, when we look at this, I wonder, Tim's story, I'm curious your thoughts on Tim's story, because I think what Tim's saying, the sentiment of what he is expressed, reflects a lot in the poll that you did, correct?
That's right. I mean, Tim is a perfect example of what we found in this polling. We polled 1,000 registered voters. We found 47% said they would like to move, and 20% said they were likely to move. One out of five voters, that's a lot of people who are thinking about leaving. If you ask why they want to leave, why are you thinking about leaving? Taxes was at the top of the list at 27%. The next most common reason people wanted to leave was the weather. The third most common reason was government, unhappiness with something to do with the government. The fourth was jobs and education. Family came in there down a little bit lower. So I think the example that Tim is good evidence for what's going on with a lot of people in the state. People generally in America today are pretty fed up with things, but that's particularly so in Illinois. 80% of people in Illinois think the state is headed in the wrong direction. Most people probably don't do the kind of research that Tim did, but we can all sense that something isn't right. It's time to be thinking about leaving. The right job comes along. Family, as with Tim, is a factor in this too. If you want to be close to your kids or your grandkids, and you sort of add this all up in the cume of all of that is, given the right opportunity, people are leaving.
So I want to go back to something you said, David. 80% of people that you polled said that they think Illinois is going in the wrong direction. I just want to underscore that. That's correct?
Yeah, it's 83.7% said it was headed in the wrong direction.
Wow. And how does that compare to previous sentiment about Illinois?
Well, it's been pretty high for the 7 years we've been doing these polls, 70-80%. What's striking in the right track, wrong track, is the people in Illinois think their state is headed, more people in Illinois think the state is headed in the wrong direction than do they think the country is headed. Usually in most states, people think the country is headed in the wrong direction, but things are better in their state. We have 59% of people in Illinois think the country is headed in the wrong direction. Compared that to the 83% who say the state is headed in the wrong direction. So people are more pessimistic about the state than they are the country. Locally, things are a little better. If you ask people, what about your area? Headed in the right direction or wrong direction. 49% say their local area is headed in the right direction. 42% say it's headed in the wrong direction. So it's a little more optimistic, but still pretty evenly divided.
Tim, how did you feel about your local area, about the Danville area? Did you feel that Danville was headed in the right direction?
I'm listening to David's comments and taking them to heart. I'm probably the exception to the rule in his study. I actually believe that Vermilion County and Danville, I mean, we all know we all have some, but Vermilion County and Danville, I really believe has some really quality leadership that have some great ideas and are trying the best they can possibly do to improve a not very rosy situation. And I believe they're doing a pretty good job with what they have to work with. They just struggle with what they have to work with, like a lot of areas in the Midwest and throughout the country. I mean, Vermilion County and Danville is not the Lone Ranger in fighting an uphill battle.
And Tim, can I ask about your business? Because you are still working in Illinois part-time, at least, correct?
That's correct.
And was that just a logistical, like it's just you've been, I imagine you built up your work, you've been doing this in Illinois. That's something that's not necessarily feasible for you to move to Indiana?
I sell farms for a living. So I do a lot of my work on the phone. I don't have to be in my office in Danville every day. I'm over here a couple days a week. So I do have the luxury of having some flexibility in that regard.
Mm-hmm. And so do you sell farms across Illinois or Indiana or across the Midwest?
Illinois.
And are you finding in your business that, and I'm just curious, when you talk to people who are selling farms, are they selling out because they want to leave the state, or is it more kind of your more typical farming story of maybe there wasn't another generation to take over the farm? What are your clients telling you?
It's a whole host of reasons. I think you hit on probably the number one reason. It's no secret that a lot of young people move off the farm in today's day and age, and they're spread throughout the country. And when mom and dad pass away, the acres get cut up into much smaller segments. And at some point, the siblings, in a lot of cases, just decide that it's time to liquidate the farm and move on with their lives in whatever direction they've chosen.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation. We are going to talk about young people and how young people were viewed in this poll with David Yepsen. He's the director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute, with Tim Busby, who has just left Illinois after his entire lifetime here and moved next door to Indiana. We welcome your questions and comments. I see some Facebook comments. We're going to get to that after the break. You can tweet to 21st Show, 21ST Show, and give us a call if you want, 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455, and we'll continue this conversation in just a few minutes. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We're talking about whether or not you're fed up with Illinois, and if you're so fed up that you're ready to leave. My guests are Tim Busby, who has done that. After lots of research, after being a lifelong resident of the state, he's just moved to Indiana, to Lafayette, nearby in Lafayette, because of taxes. We've been talking about taxes, education, jobs, the climate, the number of units of government that are in Illinois, how much that's frustrated him. We've been talking about this also with David Yepsen. He's the director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University in Carbondale. They have a poll that just came out showing nearly half of Illinois voters say they're thinking about leaving the state, 47%. Steph on Facebook says, Midwest winters have always been my incentive to leave, but the state budget impasse and school funding imbalances have really drummed up that desire. You can keep the comments coming. You can tweet to us, 21STShow. You can post on our Facebook page. You can give us a call, 1-800-222-9455. David, when we look at that 47%, I wonder how the numbers show people under 50, and how are people under 50 polling about how they feel about Illinois?
More of them want to move than are people over age 50. Under 35, it's pretty close to 60%. So that's another troubling figure for the future of the state, in that it's sort of the seed capital, younger people who are saying, gee, I want to get out of here. If you're older, you're less likely to want to leave. So in addition to all the other bad news we've been talking about here today, I think the demographic piece of this is important.
Because it sort of signals the future. If we're thinking about people under 35, 60% of them saying they want to leave, obviously not a good sign for the future. I also wonder about education, too, David. I wonder if you could weigh in. I know this wasn't necessarily in the poll, but what do we know about where people pick places for college? For example, if they pick colleges outside of Illinois, does that mean they're also less likely to come back?
I think so. Anecdotal evidence suggests that. And that's particularly pronounced right now because with the turmoil in funding of higher education, many students are, in fact, looking outside the state because they want some certainty in their education. They want to know that if they go to enroll at this university, it's going to be around in 4 years. I'm going to get the classes I need. The instructors will be there. So, again, anecdotally, here in Southern Illinois, we do see rising enrollments at Southeast Missouri State University and schools along the border. And also, I think there's some evidence of that in terms of K through 12 education, parents looking at school districts right across the state line. That's not an option that's available to everybody. But there in Chicago, the turmoil in the Chicago public schools has many people thinking about it. Boy, I've got to worry about my kids. Is there some way I can get out of here? I'm going to want to do that. So it's the fourth most common reason people list for why they want to leave: jobs and education.
I wonder, David, how Illinois ranks compared to other states in terms of sentiment about the state saying they would want to leave. I know the Simon Institute doesn't necessarily poll people from other states, but how does the polling you've done, do you know how that matches up with sentiment about how people feel about other states?
Yes, the Gallup organization has done polling about this and does find that Illinois ranks right at the top among the states in the numbers of residents who are thinking about moving or would like to move if they had the opportunity.
Tim, for your family, you mentioned that you have a daughter in the Indiana area. Does this mean for the Busby family, everybody's out of Illinois? I'm curious about that in terms of, has your entire family now left Illinois?
Well, my mother and father passed away several years ago. I have a sister who lives in Illinois. I have a brother who relocated to Montana 16 years ago and loves it. So that comprises my immediate family along with my daughter. So now that my wife and myself and my daughter live in Indiana, my sister is the only direct relative I still have living in Illinois.
Mm. And earlier,
and
David...
She did move back from Utah a few years ago.
Oh, so she moved back.
Number of years. Right.
And I wonder, David, was all of the things we talked about, David, you just mentioned the budget climate over the past year. You've also done, the Simon Institute has done polling, and it's interesting the polling you guys have had recently that actually finds that 2/3 of people you poll say the budget stalemate hasn't affected them. So I wonder, as we're thinking about people who, if we're thinking about the data we've seen over the past year about sentiment about Illinois, but also whether or not they've been directly impacted, what your sense of that is when you're looking at all of these polls about, is it just sort of a general feeling of malaise for the state, even if it's not personally affecting them?
Yes, I think that's right. I think many people simply are not touched by government. Most people they're not on Medicaid. Most people don't have children in school. Most people, when was the last time you went to the courthouse to do something? You don't go there very often. So for a lot of people, they're not affected by government. I mean, think about government services helping those in need. For those of us who are not in need, we may not feel that it really touches us. But I think people in those brackets, like Tim, understand that we do have a budget deficit. And that taxes are going to have to be increased as part of any solution to the state's fiscal problems. We can talk about how and why and where it's going to come from, but there's no solution to the state's fiscal woes that does not involve additional revenues in some fashion. Maybe higher income tax, broader sales tax base, tax retirement income. Those are all options on the table. And people look at that, and they know that this problem with the state's finances, they're not going to get solved overnight. Even if they reach a budget deal in Springfield, it's going to take years before this state gets out of this fiscal mess. And so even people who are not directly affected by the budget stalemate still understand that they are going to be affected in terms of their tax bills going forward.
David, I wanted to ask you about the question you asked in this poll about whether or not the country and Illinois is headed in the right and wrong direction. And as we mentioned, almost 84% of people that you polled said that Illinois was headed in the wrong direction. But you also, I was surprised to see that almost 60% also think the country is headed in the wrong direction. And I wonder how much of this this poll, which was actually conducted before the second presidential debate, which I think lots of people, Senator Durbin was on the show yesterday commenting on how this was a low point in American political history, frankly. I wonder if if that sentiment, if we're thinking about the tough year Illinois has had, the tough 2-3 years looking at the budget, the fiscal crisis, coupled with the presidential election and the conversation we're seeing nationally, where you think, I mean, are we just in a pretty bad place as a state right now when we're whether we're looking at national or state politics?
Well, you know, I think most Americans are in a pretty bad place. I mean, that 58% wrong track for the country out of Illinois. I mean, that's pretty common around the country to find, you know, do you think the country's headed in the wrong direction? I just think that the people look at Illinois and they think, in addition to the country headed in the wrong direction, I think the state is headed in the wrong direction. So it's, Americans and people in Illinois are in a pretty foul mood right now.
Tim, has moving to Indiana improved your mood?
Yes, I can honestly say, because, I mean, nobody wants to pay an excessive amount of tax, me included. But when you feel like you're getting some value for your hard-earned tax money, absolutely it puts me in a better mood.
That's Tim Busby. I want to thank you for joining us, for taking the time to join us. Former Danville resident, now in Illinois. David Yepsen, director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for being with me, guys.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We've been talking about Illinois' budget crisis. Well, you know, the Associated Press has been doing some more reporting on more financial woes for the state of Illinois in the form of how much Illinois is overpaying in jobless claim benefits. In fact, Illinois, as a state, overpaid about $714 million in unemployment benefits to people who weren't eligible. And the state's only gotten back about 35% of that. It's so bad that Illinois is one of two states this year singled out by the Federal Department of Labor to work on this issue. We're joined now on the phone by John O'Connor. He's one of the AP reporters who's been working on this story. John, thanks for joining us on the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Nyla.
How does this work? Does the state just pay out unemployment benefits to anyone who files for them?
Well, the state collects a business tax from any employer in the state. If you run a business, you pay a tax, an unemployment insurance tax, and the state collects about $2.3 billion per year in those taxes. To answer your question, no, that's not the intent to just pay out claims to anyone who seeks them. But what happened in the past or to this point, Illinois probably wasn't as careful as it could be, given updates in technology and progress in that area, to make sure that they were paying the people who deserve the claims. And one thing that they relied on was employment lists that were outdated, and they had the capability to see more
to match those data up, right? Yeah, because I know so the $714 million that was paid out, these were unemployment benefits paid out, and were these to people who were already, they think, perhaps back on the job? So how does it, maybe we can just take a step back and ask, unemployment benefits, how long are you eligible to file for them when you are out of work in Illinois? What's the time frame for that?
You are eligible for, I'm not certain, it varies state to state. In Illinois, I believe it's 16 weeks. But what was happening was they were getting lists of people who were employed, but 4 or 5 months late. So who weren't employed, and they were getting these reports. What they've done now is they've required that any employer with more than 25 employees must report his or her payroll every month. So if one person has filed for unemployment benefits in May and he shows up on somebody's payroll in June, then of course Illinois can more effectively remove that person from unemployment benefits. In the past, it was 4 or 5 months before they got a list saying that someone had started working.
I see.
So, whether, you know, sometimes it's going to be fraud. You know, people are going to try to game the system and fraudulently collect unemployment benefits. And other times, it's just oversight or an unfamiliarity with the rules.
Well, and it's also, I know, I imagine, and I know from my past history as a labor reporter, talking to people who file for unemployment benefits, it's also kind of confusing. Like, there's a lot of language and there's things that you get from the government that maybe don't make it clear as to when, what the rules are, when you're supposed to stop filing. Because I know you, so you get up to 26 full weeks in a 1 year period, depending on when you can file. But then there's a certain point where you have to stop filing, obviously, when you find work. What is the state said about in terms of the staffing that they have for the state labor organization, in terms of the number of people who are able to go through claims, make sure that people have the correct information, and then they're also checking, as you said, the rosters, right? Because you want to have up-to-date information on who's part of a payroll system, so then they can kind of see if there are new people who've come onto a payroll system. Did they just start matching up those names, John?
They have. The other thing that they hadn't done is a federal requirement that if you file for unemployment benefits, you have to register with the state. You have to show the state. And in the old paper days, if I filed for unemployment, I would have to visit the office once a week. And
To show that you're looking for work.
Looking for work, and that I have an updated resume, and that I'm, you know, here are the inquiries I made. Well, that kind of fell by the wayside in Illinois.
And why did that fall by the wayside? Maybe. What has the state said about that?
That's a good question. It just was not something that was being enforced, according to the current administration at the Illinois Department of Employment Security.
And I understand there was also some staffing issues with the Illinois Department of Employment Security in terms of how much money, because some of this comes from the federal government, correct? In terms of how much, there's pass-through money from the federal government to staff the agency. Does the agency feel like they're staffed to the appropriate levels now to be able to handle these things?
Well, everybody's doing more with less, right? And what happened, it may not seem like it, but this is not a bad time in terms of unemployment figures. So money from Washington has dropped in the past few years to run the unemployment system in Illinois from about $200 million to $150 million. So one thing that ran agency has run into in the past few years is trying to downsize again, because and what happened was they are not, you know, a lot of times there's downsizing going on in private and public sectors, and you're not going to get those people back. And I think what Washington is telling the states now is you're not going to have the same type of staffing and the same number of people in regional offices around the state. Again, you're gonna do more with less. And so that was another problem.
John, I'm afraid we're almost out of time, but it sounds like, I just wanted to sum up from your article, it does sound like the state has said that they've tried to rectify some of this. So they have matched up, they're starting to match up payrolls now. But we'll tweet out the whole link to your story so everyone can see that. John O'Connor is a reporter with the Associated Press on unemployment insurance for the state of Illinois. Thanks for being with us, John.
Thank you, Nella.
This is the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo.
Oh, he's so cute.
So adorable.
Oh, can we keep him? Huh? Can we please? Oh! Just when you thought Sir Galahad couldn't get any cuter, he got cuter. So much cuter.
Hey, you guys, you gotta try a hickory nut. It's delicious. Oh, is that Squeaks, this is Sir Galahad. Sir Galahad, this is Squeaks.
Nice to meet you.
The pleasure is all mine. What do you say you let me out from this cage?
So that's the opening of the first episode of Nature Cat from season one. It's a PBS Kids series that launched in 2015. They just announced yesterday a deal for the second and third season. Nature Cat is consistently ranked among the top five PBS kids shows nationally, reaching 34 million TV viewers since their debut. The co-creators of Nature Cat, Dave and Adam Rudman, are brothers who are natives of Highland Park in the northern Chicago suburbs, and they join us now from there via phone to talk about what inspired them to create the series and what they've got planned for the upcoming series. Adam, David, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Hi. Thanks for having
us. Hello.
David, can we start with you? I understand part of the inspiration for the show is it's a show about a cat who explores the outdoors, even though he's an inside cat. You thought that was a problem for kids who don't go outside as much as maybe you guys did when you guys were kids. How does the show aim to get children interested in going outside?
Well, when we were growing up, you know, we spent almost every day outside playing just in our backyards and running around the neighborhood. And we sort of had that house that all the neighborhood kids would come to and hang out. And we were noticing with our own kids, we both have four kids, that they weren't going outside as much as we were when we were kids. And we thought maybe we could create a show or something that would inspire kids to want to get out and explore just their own backyards. So that's kind of where Nature Cat came from. Was we just want to inspire kids to go and, you know, sort of play the show outside. That's kind of how it all began. And the idea of a cat being kind of the lead character was sort of just a funny idea because cats, you know, are kind of ill-equipped to be outside in nature. So we thought if we make Nature Cat this sort of this explorer, he wants to kind of be like an Errol Flynn type explorer. But when he gets outside, he's always crashing into trees and falling down hills, and you know, it's a good opportunity for lots of comedy.
Now, Adam, are you guys, it sounds like you guys are dog people than cats, if you think, because I was thinking, why not a dog? But
I think we are a little more dog people, but we have Hal, yeah. Nature Cat's pal, and we get all of our dog humor and all of our dog love out with Hal.
And I guess there's a little bit of irony here in the fact that you're trying to get kids who watching a TV show to go outside. But I guess, Adam, is the idea, well, this is what they're going to be doing anyway, watching television. So at least hopefully we'll get them to maybe think, oh, I'll go outside after.
That's exactly it. I mean, we have to go where the eyeballs are and what kids are doing now. So we figured this is where we're at. But if we can inspire them after watching the show to get outside, then it's a win. It's a win-win for us and for the show. And it also, you know, kids today, we're also inspired by book of Richard Louv, who wrote Last Child in the Woods, and you know, he coined a phrase, nature deficit disorder, where you know, a lot of kids say are just growing up not connected to nature. So that's our goal, is kids watching the show, and we have these play the show moments where kids, and we see that it's actually, you know, it's working through Twitter and social media, that kids are watching our show and seeing things that our characters are doing, and then they're going outside to, you know, build a butterfly garden or try to look for squirrel prints on the ground or stuff like that.
And so do you have kids and parents tweeting at you the adventures their kids are having outside then, it sounds like? That
yeah,
were inspired
yeah, we
by
do.
Watching the show?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. We're getting pictures and we're getting stories from parents who, you know, who are saying their kids are playing in the mud and they're very happy that they're doing that. They're inspired by Nature Cat. And, it's been amazing just the amount of tweets we're getting and emails and letters from parents and kids who are fans of the show and thanking us for it. So it's been real positive.
David, I know you pitched the series to PBS back in 2009 and you with hand-drawn sketches you made. And I wonder, what are the steps you take from going from an initial idea to the show to a full-blown cartoon series? What's that process like?
It was originally just kind of a big idea of which we talked about, which is just this cat who wants to be an explorer. So we kind of had a nice, just the concept was really strong and funny. And then we pitched it to PBS and they really liked that idea. And we developed it with them over the next few years. And That was just a lot of going back and forth with PBS. We'd come up with ideas and send it to them, and they'd give feedback. And we'd add characters, and, you know, some characters worked, some didn't work during the development process. And eventually we got to the point where we made a pilot. So we made one episode, and then we tested that with kids. And we learned a lot from the testing. We learned, you know, that we needed another character. We needed another female character. We needed to make sure that we portrayed, you know, like iPhones and technology as a good thing, because I think in our pilot we kind of didn't have it as a good thing, but we kind of made it something that, you know, you can use your phones for exploring too. So we added a character that this character Daisy that was sort of her thing. And then after the pilot, we revamped the show a bit, and then we got picked up for, you know, 40 half-hour episodes. So it was about a five-year process, I think, of just lots of developing.
And Adam, when you guys are doing, when it's a cartoon, how does it work in terms of creating a cartoon in this day and age? Do you guys, is this something that you all sketch out? Is this something that, I know originally there were hand-drawn, I imagine, how much work do you all do by hand or computer individually and then have animators? What is that, how does that process work these days? And you guys do this, I know you have a studio on the second floor. I know your television production studio was actually in Highland Park.
Yeah, and for this, I mean, for the actual designs, David did all the original designs for the characters, and then what we do for this is we'll write a script, and then the scripts will go up to our animation partner in Canada, Nine Story Animation, and they'll, you know, do storyboards to the script or an animatic, which is kind of like moving storyboards, you know, very rough. And then we'll, you know, go through the storyboards, we'll make comments, and then it goes to the next pass, which is a, you know, a first pass at the animation. And then there's a lot of back and forth to get it right. But
how long does it take? How long does each episode take then? How long is that process?
Well, it's a year from script to screen. So, you know, it takes 1 year to do one episode.
Wow.
The whole process.
Okay, so you're working on multiple episodes at once then, obviously.
Oh, yeah, like the whole schedule is going, so there's a, you know, there's a bunch of episodes going at different phases of production at one time.
And you guys
and
have
the voice records.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I was going to ask if that was my next question. Go ahead, David.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say that the voice records happen between the finished script and the storyboards. So we usually do the voice records with our talent and then line it up almost like, it's almost like a radio play of it's all the lines laid out from the episode and lined up. And then we send that to our animation partner in Canada. And then they do the storyboards based on the voice records.
Oh, interesting. And you guys, David, how did you all, it was interesting when we've been playing episodes of Nature Cat in the office for the past couple of days. And someone said, hey, I recognize that voice. And I said, yeah, do you watch SNL? So how did you get all of the different Saturday Night Live talent involved in voicing this? Was this before they were on SNL, the couple characters you have?
No, it was after they were on. But I had worked on SNL on another thing, and I met Bobby Moynihan, and we just sort of got, you know, sort of hit it off, and then when we were coming up with who to voice these characters for Nature Cat, Bobby just sort of popped into my head. It's like, Bobby would be so great for this character, Hal, and then we asked Bobby if he wanted to do it, and he said yes, he'd do it, and then we started thinking, well, maybe some of the other SNL guys would be interested in getting on this also, so we just, you know, asked them. We asked Taryn and Kate McKinnon and Keenan, and they all wanted to do it. So that's kind of how it happened.
And do they end up doing some improv on the scripts that you write? Do you give them a little bit of leeway, or are they?
Yeah, a lot of improv and a lot of leeway. You know, they'll do the lines as is, like once or twice, and then we'll say, "All right, have fun," and, you know, make it a lot funnier, and they'll just go off and. The improvs are hilarious, and, you know, a lot of their improvs make it onto the scripts and into the show.
Adam and David, I wanted to ask you guys about your background, because David, you were a Muppet performer for more than 25 years. You played Scooter and Janice on Sesame Street. You played Baby Bear in Cookie Monster. And I've seen in the past interviews where you said what it's like to interact with kids when you are doing Cookie Monster, how you're standing right there doing Cookie Monster's voice, but the kids probably don't even notice you're there because they're so captivated by the actual Cookie Monster puppet. And I wonder how much you tried to kind of get that magic of kids being so in love with and with these characters, how you guys put that into creating the characters on Nature and Cat.
You know, I think all of, well, Adam wrote for Sesame Street for a long time also. And I think, you know, those characters are, well, they're amazing characters and they're so well-rounded. You know, they're not one-dimensional characters. And I think that we wanted to really show our characters with lots of, you know, range. And I think that's kind of what we wanted to, you know, for what we learned from, you know, Sesame and Muppets is just to kind of, you know,
daring characters and that they have faults and they have things they're scared of and, you know, and kids can relate to them. And they also see how much, you know, these characters, they love each other and they'll do anything for each other and they're good friends. And so we just want to capture all that in these characters. And then adding, you know, we're inspired by Looney Tunes and Bugs Bunny. For
Right, because that's
so
your background, right, Adam? Because you also wrote for Tom and Jerry.
The Tom and
Jerry, Scooby-Doo, as well as, it's sort of like, but it's such an interesting, your background, because it's not just Tom and Jerry and Scooby-Doo, but it's also like Sid the Science Kid and Sesame Street. So I feel like those are kind of opposite spectrums. Does it all, you think, both of those end up in Nature Cat? All of the kind of that wide range?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's everything that we really love too. I mean, you know, growing up, I mean, we, you know, Bugs Bunny, Tom and Jerry, Woody Woodpecker. I mean, you know, we love those, you know, those shows and the comedy and the physical comedy. And we wanted to get that in Nature Cat as well. And then like David was saying, these characters that, you know, they're so endearing and so well-rounded, you know, we kind of threw it all into the show and it didn't happen over time. They had to evolve and the characters have changed a lot since the first script we wrote. They feel like they're getting stronger and stronger, and the cast brings so much to it as well. So it's just a good mix of everything that we like to do.
So you guys are now licensed to outlets in Canada and Sweden and Ireland, lots of other countries, the Middle East and Israel. How do you think about the international audience as you guys are now developing seasons 2 and 3? Is that something you think about when you're writing?
Go ahead. No, yeah, I think we just think about the audience as a whole, you know, in terms of you know, this age group and families. And because this is a problem that's, you know, happening all over the world. I mean, we see research from, you know, in England and different countries where it's the same problem that, you know, the kids are not, you know, growing up with a connection to nature. So, but, you know, the problem's there, and we're just go about businesses. You know, this is one big, you know, group of kids we're trying to reach worldwide.
One last quick question for you guys. We've got less than a minute left, but just wonder what adventures is Nature Cat, what in the team, what are we going to look forward to for the next upcoming season?
Well, we are going to be doing 2-hour-long movies, which are going to be fun. One is going to be a holiday special. And one is going to sort of be inspired by Goonies, I guess, in a way.
By Goonies. Oh, so, great. Okay.
So those will be fun. Yeah. And then
a lot
just
more adventure.
Of the same, you know, we're going to, Okay. Some of the secondary characters have sort of, you know, stepped up and they've really come alive. So we're going to do more with this character Ronald, who played by Kenan Thompson, so he's going to be more a part of the show too.
All right, we'll look out for more of Ronald in upcoming episodes of Nature Cat. I want to thank David and Adam Rudman, two brothers who are co-creators, producers, and directors of Nature Cat, which you can find on PBS. Guys, thanks for being with me.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have for today. You can always find past shows by going to www.21stshow.org. You can also find us on NPR, One, iTunes, and Android. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.